What Kuznets apparently didn't ask is, how is the economy getting structured hierarchically? Once you, or rather are taught to, assume that it happens naturally, quote unquote, stages of development, you're stuck in power's trap of ideology in which power hides behind so-called market forces, telling us over and over that money and credit are not determinative. Oh, no, they aren't shaping it. Its results magically spring from the market and hidden below, what we're never told. It's power driving sectors down low. It's power doing the pricing while its sheepdogs concoct cakes and cakes of cons and religiously apply the icing. What price can our minds and hands command in the market? Power pretends market forces determine it. They hide, they hide, they hide. Why does hand always land on the bottom? They decide what labor can command and then pronounce the result, economic development. So, as we asked last week, what or who determines who gets wooed and in what way wooed, and who gets booted, and with what boot? Power would have us believe, we do. Here's a quote from Galbraith again. He's first quoting Bush, George W. Bush, from a 2007 attempt to con us, and then Ben Bernanke. Quote, and this is quoting Bush, the fact is that income inequality is real. It's been rising for more than 25 years. The reason is clear. We have an economy that increasingly rewards education and skills because of that education, unquote. And this is Galbraith, and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, a veteran economist, gave himself over to reflections on the same topic a month later. Quote from Bernanke in Galbraith's Inequality and Instability. Three principles seem to be broadly accepted in our society. That economic opportunity should be as widely distributed and as equal as possible. That economic outcomes need not be equal, but should be linked to the contributions each person makes. And that people should receive some insurance against the most adverse economic outcomes, unquote. And he comments, Galbraith comments on this, thus the prevailing view on the political right. What is striking about these concerns, he says, though, is how little they reflect the actual phenomena of rising inequality in America from the mid-1970s to the present, unquote. And that's from page 147. If, as we said last week, maintaining the cons is the most highly rewarded economic activity, this priority should be reflected in the winning sectors that James Galbraith identifies and discusses in his chapter 6, which is on the U.S., an excerpt of which you'll be able to read shortly on the Nascent's website. Quote from Inequality and Instability, page 148-9. In recent decades in America, economic inequality increased. This was, however, not some general social process widely spread across the structures of pay and income. It was rather mainly due to extravagant gains by those in finance and in the leading sectors of the day. Information technology in the 1990s and the military and mortgage booms of the 2000s. What's astonishing, however, is how few people actually enjoyed the income gains. At their peak of expansion, the winning sectors did not generate many jobs. At best, their success facilitated job creation in the many sectors that did not themselves experience rising wages. The deeper issue with inequality of this type is surely instability. That which rises like a rocket above the plane also eventually falls back to earth. And the problem with the trick of generating prosperity through inequality is simply that it cannot be continually repeated. The false starts to economic expansion since the Great Crisis in 2008, so quickly depleted by rising oil and food prices, are a sign that bubbles are no longer a plausible way to generate economic growth, unquote. And I, of course, differ with him on definitions and on worldview. I don't see creating bubbles ever having been a means to create economic growth, nor do I believe that economic growth has anything to do with that word growth in the sense of health or happiness, that it in fact means depleting the resources of the planet, and that includes us. It's never been a sustainable strategy for life. For maintaining power over us, yes. Thus, Galbraith found what we know by now, that in the 1990s, the winner was infotech and always, of course, finance. In the 2000s, military and finance. And just after what David Gordon, who we'll be talking about in a minute, just after what David Gordon and his colleagues called the cold bath treatment in their book After the Wasteland, by which they meant the heightened level of organization and determination to discipline us in the 1970s and 1980s. The winners then were those in supervision. So what is just as revealing for our objective to see power's vision and to see them as the observation that some sectors of the economy are preferenced over others is the tendency it had to bloat supervision and management. A trend that David M. Gordon identified and discussed in his book, Fat and Mean, The Corporate Squeeze of Working Americans and the Myth of Managerial Downsizing.